NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
You're listening to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast with Karen McMahon. We invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience. Heal your heart while refining your character, and enable you to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce.
Divorce is like a foreign land filled with unfamiliar rules and jargon and pressure to make complex decisions that will impact the rest of your life. Don't go it alone. Go to rapidreliefcall.com and get the support and guidance you need.
So I say, work on your love life. And the other thing I want to say is that I hope people begin to incorporate the idea of a psychological love life. That love life is not just dating and meeting people. Love life is not just having a relationship with another person. Love life is any and all experiences involving the emotion of love that occur from the moment you're born to the moment you die. That's your love life. And it's all in here.
Yes, yeah, so and you're saying attend to the operating system, which is
absolutely right, because that's what's going to churn out experiences one after the other. And if you've got a blueprint in there that's fundamentally unhealthy, that's what's going to get recreated in your love life over and over and over again. Don't fall into that trap.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain.
In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're discussing shifting the dynamic between you and your high conflict spouse or ex. And I'm here today with Dr. Thomas Jordan. Today's episode, we delve into the profound impact family origins have on adult intimate relationships. We'll explore how imprints of our family dynamics shape our approach to love, conflict, and connection, setting the stage for the patterns that unfold in our most intimate bonds. With insights from a seasoned psychologist and love life researcher, we aim to illuminate unseen threads that link our past experiences to our present struggles, providing a road for both understanding and transformation. In this enlightening discussion, we invite you to recognize and learn from the patterns inherited from your family of origin. By examining these influences, we offer strategies to shift the dynamic with your high conflict person and lay the groundwork for healthier future relationships. Whether you're in the midst of your high conflict divorce or seeking to break the cycle of discord in your love life, this episode promises valuable insights and practical advice to navigate the journey toward healing and healthier relational dynamics. With me today, as I said, is Dr. Thomas Jordan, a clinical psychologist, psychoanalyst, and love life researcher based in New York City. He is on the faculty of NYU's postdoctoral program in psychoanalysis, author of Learn to Love, Guide to Healing Your Disappointing Love Life, and founder of lovelifelearningcenter.com. This will all be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Dr. Jordan specializes in the psychological treatment of disappointing love lives and has been studying them for over 30 years. Welcome, Dr. Jordan.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm so excited for this conversation. And before we dive into the many different paths we can take with this conversation, 30 years, disappointing love lives. How did you end up with all the things one can do in the world of psychology? How did you end up here?
Well, I'm by training and approach to my work, I'm an interpersonal analyst. Not of the Freudian variety, but the American version, believing that interpersonal relationships are a source of healing as well as pathology. So the centerpiece of investigating mental illness and mental health is interpersonal relations, what we take from relationships, how we separate from them. And that's really the core of the understanding. And shifting to the love life area was kind of easy because the love life obviously is a big area of interpersonal relations. That's how I got here.
So you know, our audience is very largely in the high conflict divorce. They may be considering it. They may be in the messy middle. They may be post-divorce and struggling with co-parenting with an ex and feeling like not much has changed. Uh-huh. And at Journey Beyond Divorce, as we talked about offline, our greatest encouragement is to use the difficulty in divorce to heal and refine oneself. And I feel like you can really bring a depth of information to our audience today. And so for people who can be very self-condemning. I can't believe I ended up with this person. I can't believe I did this. Like, what's wrong with me? Why did I put up with this for decades? Can we start there and just talk about why does one person end up in a relationship like this and another so able to stay clear of it?
Well, the first point I like to make to individuals who are suffering from a bad relationship and what to do about it, or in the throes of a divorce, is that a divorce is one of the greatest learning experiences a person can have in their lifetime. And I know, you know, easy to say, but there's a lot to that. But the point is, if you learn something from your divorce about what I like to call your psychological love life, what's in your mind, largely in the unconscious, unfortunately, a little hard to find sometimes, but you can, if you're dedicated to knowing what's in your psychological love life, you can begin to see what you've learned, because it's fundamentally a learned area of our minds. So finding out what's in your psychological love life gives you an opportunity to shift what you've discovered about yourself, what you've learned. A lot of unhappy and unhealthy patterns get learned in our families of origin, for example. And because it's unconscious, we transport them right into our love lives. And if what we've learned is healthy, fine, no problem. We'll replicate that. And many people do. But if it's unhealthy, then a string of unhealthy relationships can occur all the way to what I like to call resignation, which is, and there are quite a few people, unfortunately, in that category, people who believe that love is too painful, I make the same mistakes, too many disappointments, let me not involve myself in love any further. And it's really tragic when people get to that point.
And when love has hurt so much, one could understand how.
Absolutely. It's like absolutely.
The experience that if love hurt from the time you came into this world because of what was happening with your parents, and then you replicated that throughout your life. I have a friend who said exactly that. She's like,
oh my God.
I don't want to go anywhere near that.
My God. And I've seen some very, very intense and painful experiences with people who said, well, I grew up with an alcoholic, violent father, for example, and I married two of them, and I'm working on the third. It's like, wait a minute, you know, and you get to a point where it's just too painful. See, another reason why I got into this, and it's because it's about learning. And, you know, learning is one of our greatest assets. People can learn and unlearn and learn something better throughout their lifespan. And learning is such an inherently user-friendly idea that it's just tragic that people would stay in patterns that don't produce successful results, and it's a learned experience that they're replicating. There's something about that that I couldn't accept. And it's the reason why I wrote Learn to Love. It's because when you read that you've learned something, we're so used to learning. We're in school. We're in preschool. We're learning straight through the end of our lives. So learning doesn't have to be a complicated journey. Unlearning doesn't have to be a complicated journey. Once people focus and consciousness takes over, then the groundwork gets laid for change to take place. So that's the first step.
So let me slow you down a little bit here. You said that unfortunately, like the patterns, the belief systems, the behaviors are unconscious. And you're talking about learning being conscious. So just very basic.
Okay. I would put learning, there's conscious learning, and we're all familiar with that. That's, you know, first grade, blackboard. We're being directed to focus on what we're learning. And then there's unconscious learning. And when I began to look into the type of learning that takes place in love life psychology, so to speak, unconscious learning started to emerge. And what was really exciting but troubling was the amount of unconscious learning that takes place. And I'm talking about learning that comes from experience, comes from observing. For example, you're a child in the family of origin and you're watching the parental relationship between your mom and dad.
Yep.
You're gathering information about love relations in those moments. You don't know what you're learning. You don't even know that you are learning, but you're absorbing. And the relationship people in the family of origin have with you is another big source of unconscious learning as well, that you don't necessarily consciously understand. And there's even types of instruction that sometimes occur when we're growing up. You know, the uncle or aunt that makes a comment about relationships and such. So these intensive experiential type experiences really give us the source for this unconscious learning. And it's extremely powerful because we're vulnerable, we're children, we're open to learning, we're gathering information. If we learn something unhealthy, we're as wedded to that as if we're learning something healthy, because
we don't actually know it. Like, it's
we don't know it.
I learn the times tables. I know the times tables, but you're saying this is something that's really being absorbed, but it's under the covers. It's like you don't really know about it.
You don't know about it. And that's one of the phenomena that emerged from this research that really kept me going with this, is that learning can take place unconsciously. And I will make the point that most of the learning that we're exposed to takes place unconsciously, in my opinion. That's how vast that area is.
So where I was going with my question is, I agree with you, divorce is a tremendous opportunity to learn, grow, and change. How, just on a psychological level, how do you, it's almost like you're on two different levels. You've got all this subconscious stuff going on, and then you want to consciously learn from it. So can you just talk a little bit about how those two connect? Like, where do they cross?
It usually happens because something is being repeated, replicated, mm-hmm. recreated. Mm-hmm. Those words are different, but they're very much related. Something repeated indicates that we've learned something, and it's integrated in our habits, our ways of life, our expectations. Replication implies that something in the past is being replicated again. And recreation is an interesting variation in this because it means we're actively making something happen, but we don't know what it is. We don't consciously know what it is. If I pick the same kind of spouse because my mom illustrated that model to mm-hmm. me, and it's not a good model for whatever reason, mm-hmm. I can recreate that in terms of patterns of attraction, how I behave, what I expect in terms of treatment from the other person. I'm very active in recreating my love relationships.
But isn't that all unconscious?
Unconscious. Learned and unconscious. And that's the fascinating part of it. Now, your question goes to how do we cross the line into consciousness? Okay, so in my mind, the unlearning method involves the three steps of unlearning. First one is consciousness. In my experience as a clinician in this town, people are interested in working on their love lives when something is awry. Something is wrong. Now, I'll stand in front of people. I love that phrase. Is it time to work on your emotional life? I'm going to give a talk to an organization in June where I'm going to open it up with that question. Is it time to work on our emotional life? Why do we have to wait till crisis to do that? Okay, is it time to work on our love lives? Many people do only when they're in crisis. When something goes wrong, a divorce, that's why I said it was a wonderful learning experience, because if I get somebody in my office that's suffering some level of depression, anxiety, loss, and tells me I just went through a divorce and something's wrong and it's hard to get over, I'm excited. I'm telling myself, this person is ready to unlearn. This person is ready to take the journey. That word is a very powerful word that describes your podcast. The journey from repeating, replicating, and recreating to becoming aware of what has been learned and how it's replicating unhealthy relations, love relations in a person's life. So consciousness occurs, in my experience, because something goes wrong. Now, I make the point in the book that two big emotions are not taught in school. Yet they have such a powerful effect on everything we do, love and grief. which I consider the flip side of love. It's not hate, it's grief. If you lose love, you grieve. Hate is a sick emotion. It's in another class. But grief, we don't teach people how to grieve. I teach people how to grieve when they're 50 years old and they come into my practice with clinical depression.
Right.
But when they're 10 years old and they're told not to cry at a funeral.
Right. Or don't even go to the funeral.
Oh, yes, right. They're being taught unconsciously distortions of grieving or defenses against grieving. Same for the love life. We avoid love, yet it's such a powerful emotion that, by the way, is responsible for a lot of mental illness right from the beginning of life. I like to tell people, your love life begins the moment you're born. As soon as you look at the person who's going to take care of you, you fall in love. And the patterns of your love life are in tow right from that moment in time.
So you're saying that, and I love this conversation, so we're going from repeat, replicate, recreate to conscious awareness. And then you said that there are three keys or three steps in the unlearning process.
Right. That's the first one.
Can we just summarize up top, like what are the three and then dive into each one?
Yeah. Consciousness is the first. Okay. Becoming aware of what we've learned unconsciously empowers us to be able to make change. That's number one.
So that's the intersection. So the intersection of everything we've learned unconsciously and the beginning of unlearning and getting healthy is stepping into consciousness, being aware.
Absolutely.
Of what we're unaware of.
Right. And we're in the age of change when crisis occurs. We're not into preventive psychotherapy yet.
I like that you put yet at the end of that sentence.
Yet. Maybe 50 years from now. I hope sooner. Okay.
Right, right. It's like, well, when you stub your toe, that's when you're going to start paying attention to the pain.
Exactly. Yeah. Yet. No, that's a good point, because we can be in pain and not pay attention to it.
Yes.
We can be in toxic relationships for years.
Well, and I'm curious about that, because when I was exiting my high conflict marriage, one of the things my therapist said to me was, Karen, your pain threshold is so high, I'm afraid you'll stay until you're not around anymore.
Oh.
So can you just, so yeah, I've done a lot of work since then, but can you talk about like what causes some of us to have such a high pain threshold that we just stay? There's that saying that if you put a frog in water and turn the get heat on, If you drop a frog in boiling water, it will jump right out. But if you turn the heat on and it slowly raises, it'll boil itself to death.
Yes.
Like that pain threshold. So what causes some of us to have such a high pain threshold in this?
Okay. I'm going to say a dirty word now. You ready?
What's that?
Familiarity. And notice the root. Family.
Very good.
Family. What we're taught in our families of origin becomes the basis for who we choose and how we relate to them.
And so I have a high pain threshold because from the moment I was born and I first fell in love, there was an experience of a certain level of, let's say, unhealthiness that then was my familiar.
Right. We put it all together. Early childhood, going into pre-adolescence, adolescence, young adulthood. These are all areas where learned experience can take place. And you put it all together. When I work with someone, I offer consultations to people, telehealth consultations at this point, love life consultation. And people in that first stage of consciousness, they want to, okay, what are these unconscious patterns? So we start looking at family relations. We start looking at experiences that took place then. We start putting it together, hearing stories about how mom and dad relate, how grandpa and grandma related, and, you know, philosophies about love relationships and how to deal with relationships, even philosophies about when to leave. Don't ever leave versus leave right away if you're ever abused or mistreated. So beginning to put detail and understanding and clarity to these patterns helps empower the person. It's like a self-study. It's a study of one's love relations and what's in the psychological love life, what we carry around and we use as a blueprint to determine how we will relate and who we will select.
Okay, so let's say I'm at the stage where I've worked with someone like you and I'm connecting the dots. I'm like, oh, wow, okay.
Okay.
That's what happened in my family and then my teenage boyfriend and then like my first marriage and my second marriage or my current relationship. So that's the conscious part. What happens after that?
Okay, step two is challenging these unconscious patterns. Once the light is put on them, they're now visible, but they haven't lost their power. So now a person enters into what I like to call a therapeutic state of conflict. They have the old habits, the familiarity that is propelling them towards whatever expectations and decisions they're used to making.
Right.
And now you've got something new. You've got this consciousness. You've got this awareness. You've got the support of people behind you, a coach, a therapist, a counselor, reminding, putting your mind back on these patterns so you can keep looking at them, the self-study of them. People go on dates and tell me, Dr. Jordan, I went on a date last night. Same kind of person I always go on a date with. I'm not going again. I need to break the pattern. So conversation comes up, awareness comes up that there's an ability to challenge what we've learned, because the learning doesn't stop creating, recreating. What happens is we have to strengthen the part of our awareness that has a healthy understanding of something different. And as that part gets stronger, and the strength comes from replication now, you're studying, you're talking to someone, you're keeping a journal, you're thinking about who this date is. Instead of just going for the flash, going for the looks, you're examining personality. You're thinking about how you're being related to. You're starting to put categories in your mind. Is this an abusive, controlling person? Is this someone who's respecting me? Is this someone who can communicate, self-centered versus a mutual type of interaction? So all of this observation that consciousness is given is now being applied, and challenging what has been becomes the pathway to making a correction. And that's stage three. Stage three is becoming aware of what you don't want in your love life. You've been challenging it. You're clear in your mind about what you don't want. And from that grows an understanding of what you're looking for. So now you have a clarity, what you don't want, and you're going to continue challenging that, moving it away from your love life. And now you have this brand new understanding of what you do want. I don't want any more narcissistic partners. I married a couple of them. I grew up in a home where I had a narcissistic parent. I want someone who can share, who can give, who can be mutual in a love relationship. So I'm going to go looking for that.
So what I hear you saying, one of the things we get a lot from people who first come to us is, why does this keep happening to me? So that would put them in the unconscious, right? They don't quite, like, as if it's happening to them and they aren't participating.
Exactly.
They're just not conscious yet of all of those underlying beliefs and patterns and behaviors.
Right.
So then you go through this unlearning. Crisis equals being ready. Divorce is a great crisis to be ready. You go from unconscious to conscious. You go from conscious to challenging the patterns that you're now conscious of. You go from challenging the patterns to correcting them. And so, you know, people who go out dating, I think that one of the big challenges is that chemistry soulmate thing, which is so often aligned with people with personality disorders, right? Like you're immediately, oh my God, Are you in your conscious mind when you're sitting down with this guy or this gal and they're like attractive, they're sexy, they're funny, they're charismatic? Is it harder for someone to hold on to the step two and three in those situations?
Absolutely, but not impossible. And if you've been through, and I like your choice of words, high conflict, that's painful. Emotional pain is a very powerful reminder that you don't want to do it again and again and again and again. You've looked at it. Someone has pointed out there's repetition galore in your love life. There's a point where a person looks at that and says, I have to change this. This is too painful. This last relationship that I got out of, this hurt me.
And I think that many of my clients have this huge fear, which I think makes a lot of sense, which is this high conflict person that I'm trying to divorce now, this is not the person I fell in love with. They weren't like this when I met them. They were really nice and charismatic and fun, and they adored me and they paid attention to me. So it's interesting. So if I go out there again, I think half the time people don't trust themselves, right? It's like, well, I don't trust anyone else, but I don't even trust myself, because how am I not going to make the same mistake again?
I'm going to dispel that observation. All right? I'm going to dispel the observation that the person I married is not the person I'm divorcing. You didn't know who you were marrying.
But the experience was different.
Yes.
None of us marry this son of a gun that's cussing and putting us down and being mean and nasty. No.
I've never met a son of a gun who didn't show some evidence of son of a gunness at the beginning.
This is where I wanted you to get to. So do tell. Tell us more.
Have you lost yourself in your marriage, fallen into self-doubt, insecure and uncertain of your own viewpoints? If you've disappeared behind the shadow of your partner's personality, the Reclaim Your Mind free mini course will help you understand how you got here and the exact steps needed to regain control of your life. Go to jbddivorcesupport.com/reclaimyourmind and get started today.
Here's a little story. Person tells me a story about, well, I'll back up a little. I did a survey a while back. For a while, I would say to people who were talking about love life stuff in therapy, eventually I would say, when did you know that your ex-husband was going to be a problem? You know, there was that first date. I didn't want to pay attention to that. I discounted that. The guy had such a nice automobile. He had a great house, a great job. I believed I could change him. Some said that. I'm not going to pay attention to that little thing that showed up over there that I don't like. You know how many people said that to me? Many, many, many. Okay, here's an example. One person in my survey said, Dr. Jordan, nothing came up in the first date. So I said, okay, let's play a little. Can you describe your first date to me? Now, she had a pattern of controlling men, very controlling men, which oftentimes gets translated into abuse, as you can imagine, because if the control is frustrated, blah, blah, blah. So she didn't want controlling men. So she had a date. She married this guy. I saw control when she described the date. I'm going to see if you see it. Ready? So she has this date. Summertime, nice restaurant, linen, beautiful, open doors. Everybody is, you know, upper class, middle class, whatever, having fun, great time. She's telling stories. He's telling stories. He's in the middle of a story. She says, excuse me, I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. This is what he says. No, 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 no. Wait. Let me finish this part first. And I said, what?
that man wants you to hold your urine, to listen to his story. I didn't like that. She sat back and said, you know, that is kind of peculiar now that I mention it. Who asks you not to go to the bathroom so they can finish their story? A narcissistic, controlling person, perhaps? Ah, and that's what he turned out to be. So I say, and it might be controversial, once you become aware of what you don't want, you go looking for it. You apply your intelligence, your ability to discern reality, to look at the details. You're paying attention because it really matters. It matters. And the more we educate that conscious part that wants to make sure that you don't repeat, replicate, and recreate the same heartache over and over again, it's a very powerful tool. And you can determine a lot of things very early. And that's the idea.
Okay. So I love that. Thank you so much for that. I want to touch on two things. And one is going back to challenging the patterns. So as a coach, we're always giving people some action steps, some baby steps. And so if you were to give our listeners two or three tips for that second phase, that challenging the pattern so that they become really aware, what would you recommend?
Okay, the easiest example would be the unfortunate replication of abuse in relationships. And what's correlated always with abuse is disrespect. So disrespect can have many different forms. So you're in a place where you're mixing with people, you're meeting people, and someone comes up to you, and the way they relate to you has an element of disrespect in it, or somehow disregarding. Yes.
So if I could, because most of our clients aren't in the dating stage yet, I'm more interested for the person who they're getting a divorce, they're realizing they're totally disrespected, they're calling their soon-to-be ex a narcissist because that's what we do these days. Dr. Jordan, I'm more interested in you guiding our listeners from the why does this keep happening to me to the understanding of their part in the pattern. Because the next thing we're going to talk about that is going to be key for them is shifting the dynamic between them and their high conflict spouse or ex that they're going to have to co-parent with for the rest of their life. So them changing their behavior is vital regardless of whether or not they find love again, because they're in this dance with this individual that they were married to, that they have all that pain from. What do you recommend?
Well, there's the way I look at it is, if you're in a relationship with someone who you've replicated a pattern with and it's high conflict, there's an emotional part of it. Not only have you allowed him into your love life, which can be the receptive part of that, and the flip side of it, of course, is people who abuse others, if we're talking about abuse. So you can be abused or abused or both in some instances. And I've worked with people that have done both in their love life. When you look at their love life, there's going to be an emotional equivalent, an emotional byproduct of having that person in your life. And now that we're talking about abuse, what the emotion that comes with it is fear, I find. So victims of abuse suffer fear, various kinds of fear, physical manifestations of that, emotional manifestations of it. And being able to identify that's happening and you're letting it happen, you're not confronting it, you're not setting boundaries, you're not setting limits. I think that's where the challenge, as you're presenting it, as you're talking about it, would come with a high conflict person. People, let me broaden this so I can clarify it. I've worked with people who were in emotional relationships with abusive people. They wanted to see if there was a change they could make while still in the relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll talk about that in a moment. And then there's people who got out of the relationship and want to make a change to make sure they never find another person like that. So I define those as two separate groups in a kind, in a way. The ones that want to stay in the relationship, one of the complicated, ideally, we're going to couples therapy, Dr. Jordan. My husband, he's allowing it to happen. He was cold on it at the beginning, and he's going to let it happen. That's ideal. That's wonderful. Now there's going to be a third party that's going to, in my language, define the psychological learning patterns that are there, the love life patterns, for him and for her, and they're going to be matched. You know, the person who was neglected is going to find the neglecting partner. And the beautiful part of couples treatment, if they can go the journey, is they become aware of how those two fit together. I'm letting him neglect me, you know, and I've been neglected, so I neglect, you know. So these patterns get clarified, and both partners realize that a change improves their relationship, and they can work together in making that change occur. That's the ideal, in my opinion. Okay. And I'm the individual therapist that, you know, I maximize the benefits from the person that's in therapy, because there's a lot of learning that takes place. Communication gets better, the ability to express one's feelings. So there's a lot of mileage that occurs in individual therapy if my patient is in couples therapy as well. So, okay. So that's the ideal. And then there's one partner wants couples therapy, but the other does not. Nah, that's not for me. I'm not doing that, blah, 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 blah. Change is less likely, but not impossible. Why? Because if you change one person's behavior and experience in a relationship, it tends to have effects on the relationship in total. Some things happen. I've had people in individual therapy where they've made changes in personality and character that changed the relationship. They didn't lose the relationship. They didn't leave the relationship, but they set up boundaries. They set up limitations, which I happen to think is very important when there's unhealthy behavior being recreated in the relationship. So I would say that is a major part of the challenge. Finding out what you don't want and setting up boundary, being able to communicate that to one's partner. I'm not going to stand for this anymore. I'm learning that this is unhealthy. So being able to confront, you know, I worked with a woman a very long time ago who was being abused by her husband repeatedly over time. As her self-esteem got stronger and her understanding of what she was allowing to happen, she one day, he came home drunk. She knew what would happen shortly after that. And before it really got going, she got in his face and she said, you know, I finally figured out what kind of person you are. You like to hurt vulnerable people because you won't look at how you've been hurt in your life. And she got in his face, anticipating that he was going to hurt her, as he always does after drinking. He left the house. He left the house and they separated 3 weeks later. And I still remember that case. Why? Because she changed the logarithm. She's no longer that vulnerable partner. She got in his face. She put something in his face. And I know, I've worked with abusive men. I know why they abuse. They hurt because they've been hurt. And if they can talk about being hurt in their lives, the probability goes up that they can change how they are abusive in a relationship. But a large number of them won't do that kind of work. It's too painful.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. And so I'm hearing that, and I so agree with you, that the number one skill, once you have the awareness, the number one skill, if you're still in it, and I would say whether you're in it in the marriage or as co-parents afterwards, is learning how to set and uphold healthy boundaries.
Like, absolutely. That's your protection. And communicate.
And how to communicate.
And those and two go together.
Yep. Uh-huh. So communication and boundaries, guys, are the two skills that are most important for you to work on. And our audience is both men and women who have been in high conflict or abusive relationships. And so gender aside, setting those boundaries, realizing your part is key. I would love to pivot here, and I know we could go so much deeper, Dr. Jordan, but the dynamic with the high conflict spouse now. So they're either in the messy middle of the divorce or they're post-divorce, but they've got these little people that they brought into the world together. They don't agree on anything. The high conflict spouse is uncooperative, uncollaborative, uncommunicative. Maybe the other spouse is some of that too because of their own wounds. The keys to changing the dynamic. And I'm hearing that.
Not easy.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. Out of the relationship, an ingredient that's very important is the dedication to parenting. That's going to matter. If you've got kids and you're divorced, how seriously you take your parenting is going to be very important. You may have a lot of anger and conflict towards your spouse who is now the co-parent, but if you're focused on the children's welfare, I tend to believe that it's going to be a little bit easier to reach common ground because you want the kids to have what's best. But then, you know, it falls off after that because unfortunately there are co-parents where one says, you know, now that I'm out of the relationship, you take care of the kids. I'll see them every once in a while for a visit, but I don't really want to be doing any of the hard work. You know, I don't want to be getting my hands dirty. Unfortunately, there are co-parents that will approach it that way. And then, of course, there's tragic cases where people will abandon children after a divorce and leave it to mom or dad, and the other person becomes a single person again without really caring much for what happens for the children, especially if they're a little bit older. So there's a lot of variation there. Talking to a co-parent and resolving conflict. Once again, frank talk, appealing to the parent, co-parent, that the welfare of the children is very important, and we have to work together to make that happen.
But if you're still dealing with the one who blamed and berated, still
you're still going to get berated. Some of that, in my experience.
And I think that's part of it. Is it's so interesting to me that sometimes our clients, like post-divorce, think that now they could change him or her. And it's kind of like, well, that ship sailed. I mean, obviously, if that was possible, you wouldn't be here. And yet here we are with these beautiful human beings that we've brought into the world. And so let me ask you this. Parent A is committed to kind of swallowing their pride, biting their tongue until it's bloody, doing the right thing for the kids. Parent B isn't. And
parent B isn't.
Is not.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Right. And, you know, at some point, as we know, now the children are being raised in their own intimate family, right? And they're learning their own stuff. I'm curious if under parent A, there's a healthy household. Let's say the kids are still in grade school or middle school. And parent A is done the consciousness, challenging, correcting, like reasonably become a pretty healthy person. Parent B is still parent B, like whatever their issues were. Can you give our listeners some encouragement about the impact of having the children living under two separate households now? Are there some positive impacts of having one healthy parent doing the right thing by those children? Because I think that's a fear for everybody.
Yeah, I think the fact that there's one parent doing what's healthy is very important. I think that it's a wonderful thing that it's there. It would be worse if both parents were not. So that's important. I have a great faith in the individuality of children. I think that it may be a hardship at the beginning because they're being exposed to an unhealthy and it can create conflict. But I think that the individuality of children is a wonderful process, and there's going to be a time when they're mature enough to be able to make judgments of their own. They're going to be able to look at the different lifestyles and see who was a parent and who wasn't. And I know this firsthand because people will tell me now as middle-aged adults how they felt after a divorce in their families. And they will say things like, you know, dad didn't do much parenting. You know, he was half drunk, blah, blah, blah. Or mom was always out and they were babysitters whenever we were there. And she didn't really spend time with us. So they'll make those evaluations in the process of making these corrections and what's going on, what has gone on. So you see the judgments that were formed over time. So that's a good thing. You know, human beings, and again, refocusing for a moment on the idea of challenging unhealthy habits and familiarities, that's another wonderful asset, that we can actually have a split mind for the purpose of therapeutic conflict, taking a look at something that's unhealthy. We know what's healthy. We have exposure to what's unhealthy. If two things are in a person's mind and one's healthy and one's unhealthy, that doesn't have to be totally a bad thing. It can be a process of confrontation and challenge, knowing within oneself that one's unhealthy and one isn't. It's something that people can grow through and out of over time. So I'm not too freaked out by that, Karen.
Yeah, and in between the lines, I'm reading that for all of you parents who feel you need to tell the children what's wrong with the other parent, what Dr. Jordan just said is children come to these conclusions on their own.
Oh, yes.
And better that they come to the conclusion on their own than you become the parent who badmouthed the other parent.
Right. And there's going to be a time when your child is able to acknowledge bad mouthing.
Yeah.
What is bad mouthing and what effect has it had on me?
Yeah. You know,
and that's not a good moment for the bad mouther.
No, it's not.
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
I want to ask you if there is any last thoughts or suggestions you would like to leave our listeners with, and then I'd like you to share with them your website and how they can find you and how they can find your book.
Yeah, well, I've been asked that question a lot. And what I tend to say, and I'm going to say it again, is people should work on their love lives and not wait till crisis occurs. Love life is like any other, social life, medical life, academic life. It's part of us, and keeping it healthy is very important. And it's something that can evolve and can improve, especially if we're single people, but not exclusively, in relationships as well. So it's not something to just let sit in the corner and say, well, you know, love, I know how to love. Maybe not. Maybe love is something that can mature and change and evolve and get healthier. So I say, work on your love life. And the other thing I want to say is that I hope people begin to incorporate the idea of a psychological love life. That love life is not just dating and meeting people. Love life is not just having a relationship with another person. Love life is, what's the definition I tend to use? Any and all experiences involving the emotion of love that occur from the moment you're born to the moment you die. That's your love life. And it's all in here.
Yes. Yeah, so you're saying attend to the operating system, which is
absolutely right, because that's what's going to churn out experiences one after the other. And if you've got a blueprint in there that's fundamentally unhealthy, that's what's going to get recreated in your love life over and over and over again. Don't fall into that trap.
Beautiful. Where can our listeners find you?
My website is lovelifelearningcenter.com, and I wanted it to be a bit of a library. It's got about 300 and some odd articles in there, different topics. the real stuff about love and relationships and critical love life issues. So there's a lot of articles in there that'll make you think about your love life. And that was the purpose of it. My wife, Victoria, and I, we offer love life consultations by phone if people need a little guidance or support to get through these steps in the unlearning process. We love to do that work. And I'm on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
And he has an article, which is in the show notes, that is called Emotional Divorce Recovery, which I encourage you all to click on and read. And the other thing is, again, Dr. Thomas Jordan's book is Learn to Love, a guide to healing your disappointing love life. You can find it on Amazon because I did this afternoon. So check that out as well. And what a pleasure, Dr. Jordan. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your wealth of information with our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me, Karen. I had a great time. Thank you so much.
And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, you guys take care. Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me, a world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, it'll be the spot for everyone. From book club to game night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick Scented Oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.